Hello and welcome to the podcast. We are quip free. I think we've run out of all of our smart sayings having to do with having the word mark in them. Unless listeners, please send me some more.
Or you could do carry ones. I mean, I always just go with carry on, but yeah, you know, I just, where
classic,
else to go?
The classic, classic one. Exactly. Yeah, the black turtleneck of
so
carry.
We could also just have a contest, right? So basically, what should this be called?
That actually, that would be great too.
That would
I like
be good.
That.
We
yeah.
Could, we could go
send
that.
Us some suggestions. That'd be very good.
So the news, what's been going on? It's been a while since we got together.
Holy cow. Well, it seems like it's so heavy right now, too.
God, it's bleak, isn't it?
Especially with what happened in New Zealand. I mean, that was in a country that you wouldn't necessarily expect it.
Well, also the guy who did it wasn't from New Zealand.
That's
he
right.
was from Australia, which is also a country you wouldn't expect
it in. They have super tight gun laws there.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think that I was mostly struck by the response from the government. And not having a super great sense of what I would expect of New Zealand politics, the forward-leaning part on the Prime Minister, I thought that not naming the shooter seemed like one way, and I liked the part that she said to honor the victims, say their names over and over again.
Yeah, I mean, so my brother lives in New Zealand.
Oh, he does?
In Christchurch.
Oh.
Yeah, so basically I was emailing him, and, you know, and he was just like, you know, there's no words, you know, senseless,
right.
whatever, right? But, you know, there are some words we need to use, which is basically... I think the following statement is now correct, that basically more people have been murdered by domestic terrorists mm-hmm. in most countries than by so-called international terrorists,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So if that's the case, it's time that these people are regarded as a serious terrorist threat. And that means shutting down the Facebook channels. Mm-hmm. That means monitoring the groups. That means identifying the people and keeping them under surveillance, because they're a massive threat to public health.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Going out and slaughtering people in places of worship just because you're some kind of... it's just awful.
Well,
enough.
And the person on the street interviews from it to talk about the extremist element, they said, I don't feel like I live near any extremists. I don't feel like these attitudes are pervasive in the Christchurch community or New Zealand. Or
no, totally not. In fact, a guy who came from Australia specifically to do it, because New Zealand was such a soft target. But let's remember this. I don't know if you caught this one. Erdogan in Turkey was showing bits of the video that the guy shot at an election rally to basically drum up kind of like, you know, Turkish hatred against the West.
Right.
So it's like, oh, brilliant. You know, it's not bad enough that you've got domestics playing the Muslim fear card to justify murder. You've then got Islamic governments playing that back against to whip up their own supporters. So that's a horrid mess.
And it's hard to think about what the policy is that solves this, because of course it's an unsolvable behavioral attitudinal problem. But it does seem like the Facebook, the social media companies that do not want to claim themselves as being media companies, that do not want to censor, that do not want to shut accounts down, have a role.
That's
got to
change. It's
got
to change. Right? They're media platforms, right? At the end of the day, it's no different from Disney. If Disney had a chat board or basically sort of people could weaponize, they'd be shut down in a heartbeat. So why is Facebook or any of these other places exempt from this?
Well, and that Mark Zuckerberg, I think a couple of weeks ago, came out with a new set of standards that they were going to push on through Facebook. And you just thought you are unmoored in the policies that you have, because you refuse to take any strong stand. And I mean, they're actually doing far better than Twitter is, which I think is not at all, has no new policy, has no new rules on this. So it does feel like that social media is so far behind on this. And I sometimes don't want to blame social media because I think, oh, it's a tool. But I think in this case, it really is. It's the communication venue.
Well, you know, think about it this way, you know, a knife, a hammer, or a gun is a tool.
Yeah.
Right? And in the wrong hands, bad things happen with them. And so you legislate, in most places at least, right? So if social media has been weaponized, you legislate. That's what you do. Or you force them to take their accounts private and make people pay for it. And then you can do what you want, which is actually apparently the way that Facebook is thinking about going in the future anyway.
Well, and we've talked about this on the podcast before, like who owns our data. And this is all, of course, wrapped up in that. But I think it's on the part of on Twitter and on Facebook that they don't also want to admit that this is business profits.
Yeah.
This is money in their pocket for their shareholders. The Erdogan clickbait stuff, all the crappy stuff that we see on our websites.
Exactly.
And I don't know, they haven't yet reconciled themselves with the ethical part of this.
You know the problem reconciling yourself when you're the owner of a multi-billion dollar venture? it's really hard to reconcile yourself when you're the owner of a multi-billion dollar venture.
There's no incentive that pushes you to do that.
There's none, exactly. Which is why we have governments.
Yes.
That's what they're for, believe it or not. That's what they're meant to do. So what else does the government do? Or what else has the government done?
Well, they're supposed to oversee our traffic and transportation and keep the public safe keep us safe, not even in some regard, but to keep us safe. And it seems like the American government, governments around the world fell down on this one. And this is now.
But then they stepped up. I mean, you know, we were last to go, but ultimately we are, of course, talking about the 737 MAX issue. But everybody basically eventually said, all right, stop. There really seems to be a problem here. So what's the latest on it that you've picked up after these two crashes and the FAA grounding and all this?
Well, I thought it was interesting how I was listening to the news the day of, and the transportation secretary said, we're not grounding them. And then by the end of the day, the president said,
we're
grounding them. In that regard, I kind of appreciated when a president will contradict one of their agency heads.
Exactly.
But also there, and this was something that we've again talked about before in this podcast, is the duopoly and how there was such a push for Boeing to get this plane out there that the oversight seemed to have completely
exactly because the A321neo and the A320neo was basically the same market segment.
Yeah.
So of course they're highly resistant to basically taking this off, and if they admit there's a fundamental problem with it, then of course Airbus wins. It is very zero sum. This is a hugely important part of the American economy, so you understand all those incentives there. But at the same time, I gotta say, the president was right in another way, which is when he said, well, maybe this thing's too damn complex.
Yeah.
So, and you know, and that sounds like one of those sort of classic Trump things to say, but you look into this and what you find out is this is a 50-year-old airframe.
Yeah.
And in order to make it longer and better and all the rest of it, you need these new engines. And these new engines needed to be put forward much further, which totally alters the aerodynamics, such that basically, unless you've got very, very fast computers constantly running software to basically trim the aerolons in different parts of the aircraft in, let's say, counterintuitive ways, then damn thing falls out of the sky. It just drops. So, you know, I mean, I like getting on the notion. I like getting on a plane and thinking, if they basically put down the flaps, right, or put up the flaps, I forget what it is, and the pilot says go, it takes off and it goes in a straight line.
Yeah.
I don't like the idea of getting on a plane that's so damn complex that if there is a bug in the software, everybody dies.
Yes.
And that's a real problem.
Right, that there can't be a human to overtake the system and then fix it.
Because what they found with the Lion Air cockpit voice recorder was the pilot was going berserk trying to override the software, and everything he did was counteracted by the software.
Yeah.
Crazy stuff.
I mean, I hate to sound like a Luddite here, but it does make you wonder about the future of AI and like where are humans and all this sort of, like, maybe we actually do need a human.
Yeah, exactly.
In the cockpit. Watch this. This is going to be a great transition.
Go on then.
I don't think I can do it. I was gonna say something about planes landing to Brexit, but I don't know. I couldn't quite.
Okay.
I mean, this is our part of the podcast.
Every time now, it's for the past 2 years. It's like, and what's been going on in Brexit this week? Well, they still don't have a decision. They still don't have a deal. They have a deal, but they don't like it. I actually put this out on Twitter last week or something like that. I think it still applies. So my way of summing up Brexit now is a conversation I had with my daughter when she was five, and it went like this. So what do you want for dinner? Right? And she said, I don't want pasta. Okay, that's fine. But you do want dinner, right? Oh, I definitely want dinner, right?
Yeah.
But no pasta, no. So what do you want? I want spaghetti. but not pasta, right? And that's just kind of the whole thing in a nutshell, right?
Right.
So as ever, the problem is there's no majority in the House of Commons for anything.
Yeah.
And therefore, they're just kind of going round and round and round, cycling, as game theorists talk about it and political scientists talk about it. There's no stable majority, so it just goes round and round. And May seems to be basically running down the clock to try and scare everyone to accepting a deal, which is far worse than where they started.
Yes,
and
just
that's
have the other avenues, right?
or no deal.
Yeah,
and that's it.
Yeah.
So they're going to kick the can down the road. They're going to get an extension, maybe to June.
Yeah,
and that means we'll be able to talk about it at least two more times before we break up for the summer.
I mean, that's awesome because
and we'll say it again. What we'll do is we'll actually just take the segment and then just say it again
because
nothing will have changed.
Yes. It really annoys me that people on the media coverage continue to say this is Theresa May's problem. Like, this is not Theresa May's problem. She didn't create this problem. problem. She is the poor person that has to deal with this problem that no one actually wants to deal with. And that it seems like Jeremy Corbyn is happy to do a hard Brexit, and somehow he feels like in his game of brinksmanship would actually win. I mean, I just don't.
Well, basically, I mean, I understand Jeremy's motivation here, which is I want the Tories to own this. And in the process, I might actually destroy the Tory party.
Yeah.
And if I do, and the Tory party splits and you get a right-wing Tory party and a centrist Tory party, the centrist Tory party basically dissolves.
Yeah.
And then I've got a much weaker opponent, and then I can rule.
Which is, I mean, and I understand
Game
politics.
Of Thrones stuff.
It really is, because it's the death of the, I mean, the country.
This is,
I mean,
like, this basically, is not... the Tories are the Lannisters, right?
Yeah.
And what
yeah.
Jeremy's trying to do is split the Lannisters.
Yeah. Yeah, and by marrying the Targaryens or the Starks, marry Arya off or something.
Just basically split them, that's it.
It's just, it's still, as someone who understands the game of politics, you still think, wow, you just don't care taking your country to the brink and then possibly pushing it over. And
but then you can legitimately say, I didn't take them to the brink. Why should I solve their problem?
Yeah, that's a great point.
I didn't
yeah.
do it, right? Yeah. We didn't yeah. do it. So let's see where it goes. And then when we destroy them,
yeah.
we can then pick up the pieces.
Yeah, right. And then we'll kind of the savior or
exactly.
whatever that looks like. Another B, and this is Beto.
Oh, from my Brexit friend, to Beto. Yeah. That was good.
I'll connect this with thinking the no's. One of my friends says bet no.
I like that.
And I also like the president taking him to task for it. Did you watch his announcement video?
No.
There's a lot of gesticulation. It was very like big motions. So he kind of did, it kind of the hands did kind of take uh-huh. over the whole announcement. I'm kind of struck by how average he seems. I don't
yeah.
know. Maybe you're really excited about him.
Oh, God, no. I mean, the last thing that I'd be in favor of is, you know, yet another billionaire son on some kind of like, and I'll mention the words, white privilege ego trip. I mean, he's content. Does he actually have any policies?
No.
Right.
No.
Does he actually stand for anything other than I'm cool, vote for me?
Yes. I'm young. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's like people are like, oh, it's Obama. I'm like, oh, you mean basically that empty cipher we projected all of our hopes onto
yeah.
and then nothing
yeah.
happened for a decade?
Yeah. Yeah.
With the partial exemption of healthcare. You've got to give him that. But I mean, I don't even see that in this guy's locker. I don't see no. anything at all.
I mean,
substance.
I don't know that we're his demographic, like, at all, but I mean...
For yourself, I'm still young.
Yeah, that's true. His rollout has been lots of question marks for me. But even if he doesn't have to have a policy on everything, but have a trademark, have something. I mean,
I just love the fact that you can raise $6 million in 24 hours with having zero content. Seriously, I'm going to announce for president. That's it. And then I'm going to take the money and spend it.
Yeah. I mean, you might
on
as
me.
Well.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Just commercials.
Probably get $6.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there we go.
But even, hey, there's $6
No, but I mean,
$6 million
for like yeah. for utter contentlessness. It's like, what is that?
With no say, at least, I think Obama leads pretty clearly with healthcare stuff. I mean, out of the box. And even Elizabeth Warren, and we can say all the things about her, all the criticisms, but she's come out with some pretty
strong policies.
No,
she's got a coherent
policies.
Set of
yes.
ideas that add up to a very
yes.
different looking America.
Yeah.
And you can say, I like that or I yep. don't. So far, this guy, I've got absolutely nothing.
Even if he said, you know, Medicare for all, that would be at least,
exactly.
that would be something.
How about Beto Care for All?
Beto Care. That's nice. It sounds like it's a hospital.
Exactly.
We have to talk about college admissions.
Oh, we do, don't we?
I mean, this is everything.
I mean, we're sitting
right,
in a college,
right?
Right,
exactly. It's probably implicated, but
I enjoyed this so much.
It was interesting.
So what was your favorite bit of the scandal when it came out?
I think... my favorite part of the scandal was the Full House snowplow mom, mm-hmm. who's then daughter, who admitted on YouTube that she wasn't even interested in college and went to 10 classes, lost like her four deals with Sephora and a hair care product and something like that. And not that I am for, you know, people losing stuff, but I just thought the market is actually speaking on this
yeah,
one.
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, my favorite bit was it turns out that woman you're referencing has a friend. I don't know if she's the one that's married to somebody else or whatever, right? But she's a children's author.
Oh, yeah.
And she's a children's author who writes, are you ready for this? Ethics books for girls.
No.
Oh, you can't make this up, right?
Oh.
So she's got tweets out there about, don't cheat.
Yeah, right.
And like you're involved in this.
Yeah.
It's just brilliant.
Yeah.
All right. So what's the serious part of this? For me, the serious part is it really does show, I mean, we tend to think of the corrupt elite as basically being, you know, bankers
yeah.
and politicians and all that. But no, there's another bankrupt elite, which is basically anybody with money in this society. We have become so venal and so vacuous yeah. and so immoral that you can imagine that they all sat around their very expensive dinner tables and talked to each other and freely admitted that they were doing this and didn't even see it was wrong. This is what psychologists have known about corruption for a long time, that a society becomes corrupt by degrees. So you allow a little thing to happen, and then everybody's doing the little thing, and then you don't have to go far from the little thing to a slightly bigger thing. And then before you know it, you're done. Like, you have a completely corrupted society, and nothing works and everything's paid for. And it's alarming. I think this is really revelatory because it shows how corrupt the United States is.
Yes. And right? In ways that...
Right through its... This is its cultural elite behaving like this. This is disgusting.
Higher education is supposed to be meritocracy, right? This is how I pull myself up by my bootstraps and how I can get into a place that I never thought I could get into based on my talent and my skill set and my hard work.
So, no, in fairness, the way the FBI did this was they found a guy who was offering the side deals.
Yeah.
He was taking very large amounts of money and bribing individuals in very specific schools. We're not saying that this is corruption through the whole thing, right? However, right, we all know that at the top end of the food chain, right, some schools have legacy preferences, right?
Yep.
Some schools are very impressed when donors come along and build buildings and their kids happen to be at school at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a bill, I think, actually in the House, a Democrat, I forget who it is actually saying that you can be a donor to a university, but you can't do it when your kids are there. You have to wait until they're gone.
Yeah.
Which at first I was like, you mean that's not true anyway?
Right.
And
right.
It's actually not true anyway. And it's like, well, that's corruption. Come on, just call it what it is.
But it's so, I think your point about venal is it's so in your face and nobody.
And nobody cares.
Yeah.
Nobody in the in-group cares. Yes. And then they're actually shocked that people outside of the in-group care.
Yeah,
that's the thing.
Were you surprised by anything that was revealed by the FBI?
I was surprised that people were willing to pay $500,000 to get into USC.
USC, right?
I mean, I didn't think it was actually that high up the food chain, personally.
I didn't think it was that difficult.
I
mean, these are great schools, but I didn't think... I mean, I really thought it was going to be Harvard, Yale, Stanford. Right.
But again, it also shows, you know, college is this meant to be this thing. It's the main ladder of social mobility for people in the society. And if it just becomes a kind of, as economists call them, giffen good, right?
Yeah.
A thing that you pay even more for because of its prestige factor.
Yeah,
and it just becomes a kind of status competition amongst the elite. What's the point? You're not educating these kids. That woman that's on YouTube has no interest in going to class or anything like this. You're destroying the thing from within. It's really pernicious.
But we can't say at the top institution around the world that this is not, that there isn't a segment that this applies to. I have no interest in learning. I'm going to go work at Blop Family Company XYZ.
Yeah, or you're going to inherit so much cash like when your parents finally sludge off, it doesn't really matter, right? Now, you know, but the thing is that's an old problem, right? I mean, in a sense, if you went back 100 years, right, everybody at Oxford and Cambridge was like that.
Sure.
And yet they still learned stuff, right? You know?
Right.
So, you know, it's not sort of like suddenly new, but there is this way in which it's just suddenly so vulgar.
Yeah, yes. And are those people running the country into the ground right now with Brexit?
Oh, yeah.
And probably for the US and any other country as well.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I was also struck by the amount of money, but there's so much, I can't remember the guy's name who did all this dealing, but there's got to be 1,000 other guys like him. Maybe not working on the scale of him, but just the SAT, ACT, fake test takers, like all of this starts, or even on a much lower level, just writing personal statements.
Absolutely.
And that sort of stuff. And you wonder, and this is something that I thought was interesting, is that no major school has come out with any big policy change. They haven't said, you haven't seen any university say, we're not going to take any money.
Well, exactly. But in fairness to them, I mean, you know, they can legitimately point to the fact that this was a scam that was run by an outsider who broke and essentially broke in and bribed people, right?
Yeah.
In a handful of schools. So until we have evidence that this is a much more widespread systemic problem, then, you know, they have every right not to do so, right? But where I worry about it is higher education institutions, particularly in this country, are seen as increasingly, let's say, left liberal bastions.
Mm-hmm.
And the public is not. There was a really fascinating piece in the Times a couple of days ago, which I put on my Twitter feed. I don't know if you saw it. And it was about Americans' attitudes not towards race, but racial ideology.
Yeah.
And what it showed was, statistically speaking, the most extreme people in the United States, that is, they are the smallest percentage with the loudest voice, are basically white left liberals. Right? And they are not representative of the preferences of the majority.
Yeah.
And the government in question basically would like a good reason to interfere into the policies of these institutions. Mm-hmm. So Trump's threatened executive order on free speech, etc. All of this is just feeding that.
Yeah.
And that type of intervention is extremely dangerous, regardless of its motivation. So this one's got a way to play.
Well, right. And this is so interesting that this adds so much fuel to the fire to say that academic institutions are just the places where
if they're just like corrupt playthings of the rich, they will have no one to defend them.
Right.
Now, as somebody who works at one of these things, right, I don't actually think that's true. For the record, it's not because I'm incentivized by my salary. I do not actually think this is true, right? The vast majority of students that I've ever taught in my career have been smart, hardworking people.
Yes.
But if the perception is that this is a crooked insider game, end of story, then these institutions, they may have been around for like quite a long time, they suddenly become vulnerable.
Well, and the value of education, which is already being questioned, really is then put on the table alongside of this to say, well, if it's just the elites and they're able to not learn anything or not have to attend class, then really what is the point?
What's the point in the whole thing?
What
absolutely
is the point of this?
So is there anything fun to end on?
There was one funny thing.
What's
you
that?
Might have seen this with the president called Tim Cook, Tim Apple.
Oh, yeah, that
and
was
I
good.
Just thought it really tickled my funny bone for some reason. And I just thought it was really funny with Tim Cook sitting next to him.
Sit next to him.
It's just more efficient to call him that. And I just thought, because I just kind of empathize with the president, because you know you're in the moment sometimes talking, you just can't get to whatever it is
This is weird. This is like Mark and Carrie empathize with Trump episode. But yeah, I mean, I was exactly the same thing. It's like I do this all the time. I'm hopeless with names, right? I mean, I've always been hopeless with names.
Yeah.
The fact that I would have just sat there and looked at him and just went. I wouldn't even remember Tim, let alone Tim Apple.
Well, I probably would have said like Todd McDonald or something.
Exactly.
You know, I would have gotten the first name kind of right,
but not really.
Anyway, yeah, it is like a sympathy episode for the president.
I know. Exactly.
It's tough to be president, though.
It is. It's actually it's a shitty job.
Yeah.
Look, have a look at pictures of presidents on their inauguration.
Yeah.
And then have
so
a look
true.
At the picture of the day they leave office, right?
Yes.
Now, even if it's only one term, you look like you've aged 10 years.
Yes, it's not.
I never want this thing. It's
not
ridiculous.
An elixir for
youth. No, absolutely. God almighty. But in order, here's a little segue, right?
Yes.
Perhaps the only person that could survive this would be Captain Marvel.
Oh. Please.
Which I saw last weekend. I really enjoyed it. It was really good.
Yeah, so thumbs up. You would
thumbs up, definite thumbs up, and it ties into Endgame, and I'm looking forward to seeing that.
Yeah.
And Game of Thrones is starting, so
wait, I don't know Endgame.
Endgame is the Avengers movie that ties into this. So even if the real world is sucks and is horrible and is filled with violent, horrible people and planes are falling out of the sky and everything else, then we've always got the escapism of Marvel movies.
I'm rewatching Game of Thrones right now.
And so Game of Thrones.
I'm in the middle of season 3. And I just
you got to hurry up.
I know, but I just have to say, like, rewatching it, all the things that you've, all the details, they actually come to light more. And you really see how deep the whole show really is.
Exactly. So Game of Thrones is going to end. Marvel's big sort of first iteration of the Marvel comic universe is going to end. I think at that point, hope dies, and then we all just become chronically depressed.
Will you binge Game of Thrones, or will you watch it? Will you wait until it's over and watch it all at once, or will you watch it as the season unfolds?
You know, I haven't decided yet. I think I may actually try and just wait until it ends and then watch it all at once.
Yeah.
And just put my fingers in my ears and not read anything ever about it. I might try that.
That's what I was going to do, is how I stay away from hearing all the spoilers and that sort of stuff.
So that means anybody who's listening to this podcast, do not send us emails. Do not tweet us updates on the plot. That would be really mean.
Yes, it would destroy what hope we have left in the world.
Exactly, because we're getting pretty thin on it. All right, folks, that's us, I think.
Thank you.
See you.
Talk to you next time.
Until next time.